ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Coming to you live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford. Here now are The Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, hell yeah. You about to get all stung up.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Hey, we are live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford. This is the Killer Bees. He's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton, in for Jeremy Branham. ESPN 97.5. Every time that we get to come out to places like this, it's always great to be able to eat wonderful food. Shout out to our friends at Gentle Ben for being a part of this today. And, of course, there are actually Gentle Ben specials today, by the way, as well. We may have to try those at 3:01 p.m.
I'm always about the trade of get rid of Jeremy and keep his sponsor involved, and I think that was a fantastic move today.
Win! Yes, well, I do believe that Gentle Ben does probably bring more to the table than Jeremy, but you can probably say that for me as well.
Jeremy is Joe. Hello, Joe, by the way. Joe pointed out to me that yesterday Jeremy was at the water park that we're all familiar with that has quite the strange name. Joe made it a whole lot more awkward and strange yesterday when he turned Schlitterbahn into Schlitterbong.
Yeah, my bad.
Oh, that's better than I thought you were going to say.
I didn't know you could smoke it, but evidently Joe created that.
I thought you were going to, you know, go a different direction and it was going to get messy.
No, I didn't say about anything about a creek.
Yeah, so, the bong, yeah, you know what? If he'd have made that joke at 3 o'clock, it would have fit.
Yeah, it would have fit better than this guy's shirt that just walked in. He's got like a Smedium on, and he looks like a small version of the Keebler elf, but at least he's here. There's a group field trip from Lifetime Fitness here today to support the show, so it's great. Fantastic.
Yeah, a little shout-out to the guys at Lifetime Fitness, all of whom probably know some guy who looks like you.
Maybe, yeah. Good possibility. Hey, Joey, you're not even chiming in on the fact that you called it Schlitterbong?
Yeah, I said that was my bad.
Bong.
I don't know that you could just say my bad when you take a legendary establishment and place that everybody bong, likes to go and call it a bong.
I took the L yesterday. I don't need to take it again today.
But you had a better day yesterday than you did the day before. Don't forget that.
Well, that was because of me, but yes.
Nah, I don't know about that, but okay.
Well, you know what? Since we're talking about bongs, maybe this guy hit a few too many from the bong right before doing an interview with Time Magazine. You might know him as the Commissioner of Baseball, Rob Manfred, or we might know him as that clown moron running the league and trying to ruin baseball for all of us. But Rob Manfred decided to do an interview with Time Magazine, and somehow, some way, of course, even though it's 6 years later, somehow the Astros sign-stealing scandal came up. Of course.
Of course it did.
And Rob Manfred said something very, very different from everything he's ever said about it before. This time, Manfred's saying that maybe he should not have taken punishment off the table. That he should have. His quote was, "I'm not sure I would have approached it with giving players immunity. Once we gave players immunity, it put you in a box as to exactly what you were going to do in terms of punishment. I might have gone about the investigative process without that grant of immunity and see where it takes us. I'm not going to punish anybody. Maybe not my best decision ever."
Rob Manfred can kiss all of my ass. And he can pick a cheek and take it right down the middle if he'd like, because I'm so sick and tired of Rob Manfred. Because you can sit there and make the Astros your poster child. You can go at them as many times as you want from however many angles you choose to take and just think that everybody's going to see it's going to be okay and whatever you say goes. But yet you cover up the Yankees letter and you say that's no big deal. Previously, you covered up the Apple Watches and all the other crap that they were doing. You covered up the Goldilocks balls. You cover up everything else and try to sweep it under the rug, including when Yankees pitchers get caught with sticky stuff on their fingers, they don't get suspended, but everybody else does. But yet when you feel like it and you have a certain way about when you decide that you want to get everybody to kind of jump back on the Rob Manfred bandwagon, then you start coming back at the Astros to try and get them to say, yeah, screw them. They should all go at Houston. Houston were the guilty ones. At the end of the day, there has been so much cheating, and everybody's been doing it. And we all highlighted the fact that team after team had system after system and did what they were going to do their way. The one big knock on the Astros is that they did it with more technology than most. Okay, fine, so be it. But now, 7 years later, whatever it is down the road, you want to go back to this, regurgitate all of it, and say, it's all about what I would have done differently with the Astros. Screw that. Stop protecting the Yankees and some of these other teams and go after them too and say, you know what, it's all for one and everybody did it, and point out what everybody else did, or just let it go because the decision's been made. You can't go back with revisionist history and change it. So deal with it.
You've heard me say this for years. Orange team bad. That's all it says, orange team bad. And it started from the commissioner's office. It was fed to the national media and pushed out all over the country. Orange team bad. We're not going to say anything good about the Astros. Anything they do that's good, we're just going to spin it back to something that was negative from 2017. And if we were doing this right before they're going to Los Angeles to play the Dodgers, you know, a team that was accused of cheating by the Mets, by the Brewers, by the Padres, you know, but they never do anything wrong. And let's face it, once sign stealing kind of became you're not allowed to do this anymore after the 2019 season, gee, there were a lot of players on the Dodgers whose stats suddenly went very south. And as you mentioned, with the covering up, they covered up the Yankees letter. Rob Manfred called it a nothing burger. Nothing burger. The whole letter details quite vividly all the things that they did wrong. The Yankees had the manager of their team at the time, Joe Girardi, go on MLB Network and tell the entire world not only that the Yankees cheated, but how they cheated. Hey, we're getting the feed from the camera. It's coming to our video booth. Then we're taking from the video booth. It's going down to the dugout. Then it's going to the batter. Oh! I mean, it's the guy at second
no
base.
No technology there either. No, none.
The Red Sox were caught not once, but twice. Once with Apple Watches and then again with the video room. And the only punishment that team got was, well, the video guy got suspended for a year. Would you like to know what that video guy does now?
Oh, he works for the Dodgers.
He works
for the
Dodgers.
Suddenly Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez are hitting way better than they were a year ago. I'm sure he has nothing to do with that.
You mentioned the Goldilocks balls. Wow, did they blow a cover over that? They pretended that doesn't even exist.
I mean, I had my buddies at the gym that were interested in it. They didn't know all the details about it because when Major League Baseball owns the company that makes the baseballs, the last thing they want you to know is it's not only time to make the donuts, we're going to decide who gets the cream filling like Aaron Judge, and then he gets to get all the sweets. It's so hypocritical, it blows your mind, but yet this is what baseball does on a daily basis. Rob Manfred decides it's what I say, not what I do. Don't worry about us making the balls. Don't worry about us, you know, only punishing certain teams. Just worry about when I decide to wipe my eyes clear of the tears and say, I should have done this differently, jump on my bandwagon and say, you're great, Rob. You're really good at what you do. You're not good at what you do. You're a D-bag, and you need to step away. Just like when we've seen all this stuff with the PGA and the LIV Tour and everything like that. When you're a commissioner that seems like he's more on the take as he covers up the Yankees and the Dodgers, then it's time for you to step away and find real commissioners that can make real decisions in a real fair manner. And that's not what he does.
No, this is pandering to, what, 29 other teams who are mad they didn't win the title last year?
See, this is the thing, too, what I keep saying that I want to say about this is, if you want to go in revisionist history and you want to revisit this again, the time is not right now. The time is when all these players that don't have anything to gain start to come and tell you the truth. I played on this team. When I played, we did this. When I played, we did this. And have the guys on the team. You saw Eric Kratz and some of these guys. You saw some of the other veterans that said, look, we know what was going on. Everybody was doing it. When it starts getting to where it's stacking and racking player after player with team after team saying, yeah, we were doing it. Yeah, we did this. That's when you can revisit it all and say, yeah, you know what? There was a time when everybody was doing this, and this is how it was all going down. And then maybe it'll get a clearer picture for the rest of the world that, hey, it wasn't just the Astros.
You know, at the time, the then general manager of the Detroit Tigers, Al Avila, admitted to the Detroit Free Press that the Tigers were using technology to steal signs. This is when they were losing 100 games. They admit, yeah, we did this too. Every team in baseball did it. In fact, there's an article from Tom Verducci in SI going all the way back to 2015 where he talked to what he called was the GM of a poor team who was lamenting the fact that he couldn't get the budget. to get all the high-speed cameras that he wanted to, quote, match all the other teams to be shooting on the pitcher's mound, the catcher's box, the third base coach's box, and the visiting dugout, because all the other teams were doing it, and he didn't have the budget.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody, like you say, the mid-market teams. Well, you know what? Milwaukee knew that they similarly probably couldn't have done what they were even interested in doing, and Kratz was on the Brewers. But he knew when playing the Dodgers, they had their methods. He knew when you were playing the Rockies, they had their methods. If it was the Theragun on the bleachers, if it was the different ways they were relaying the signs, it doesn't matter. The technology was in place to get the camera angles you're talking about and the video room quick enough to analyze it to get the information where it needed to go, so where maybe it didn't benefit every single time you had an opportunity to do it, but there were going to be more times than not you were going to capitalize on the fact that we've seen just as recently as this last homestand where the Astros continuously think it from time to time. Was I tipping pitches? Did they know something? Because you get a guy like Hunter Brown that goes two innings and mows everybody down, and all of a sudden in the third inning he gives up a five spot, two home runs, crooked numbers, and goes, and Jeff Blum and everybody else is saying, they're going into that dugout, rest assured, right now in the video room and trying to figure out, were they tipping something or was something going on? Because Major League Baseball players are too good to where if you give them some intel like that, that they're going to do something with it more times than not.
There's a lot to get into on this, and we'll hit some more on the other side. He's Joel Blank. I'm Patch Creighton in for Jeremy Brown. Killer Bees live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford. Come down and have lunch with us. We'll see you in a minute.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
Live from Hooters in Stafford on 59, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. He's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. And Joe, this whole thing, this is one of the biggest issues that I have with it. Aside from, oh, we got to restart the narrative, orange team bad. Last night on my way home, listening to ESPN National, what am I hearing? Oh, until every player from that 2017 team is gone, they're just the trash cans. Like, we're still perpetuating this 6 years later. The ridiculousness of it. So they're not the Red Sox trash cans, and they're not the Yankees trash cans. Only the Astros are the trash cans. But if you're Rob Manfred, what is your win here? What is your end game? What was the value in bringing up, hey, let's rehash only the Astros. Let's rehash this all over again. What was the positive end of this?
To me, it's the fact that you know that you aren't very well liked. And you know that in your back pocket, every time you bring this up, you seem to galvanize the rest of baseball from a fan perspective, with the exception of the Astros fan base. You get Dodger fans to like you again. You get Yankees fans to praise you because of all you've done to protect them. You do all these different things to get all these different fan bases to basically come to the defense of or just support Rob Manfred when he's constantly searching for love and support. And I think that he knows he takes it in the shorts on a daily basis. He knows with every passing day and new story that he looks like just more of an incompetent boob. He does something like this, and suddenly you're going to get Yankees fans and Yankees Twitter and all the media to jump on board and not necessarily sing his praises, but they won't be beating him up. And I think that's why he does what he does when he does something like this.
To me, this is just Rob Manfred being an ass again. You know, from it's just a piece of metal. Maybe that was the worst decision you ever made. Calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal. Maybe that was it. Because it certainly couldn't be helping the New York Yankees with Major League Baseball working in concert with the Yankees to suppress the Yankees' lead. I mean, that couldn't have been it. And it couldn't have been, you know, blowing off the Red Sox who got caught twice. That couldn't have been it. He comes off as an ass. So, question for
you. He makes Bud Selig look competent.
Bigger ass man, Jake, Rob Manfred.
I'm a nice man.
Yeah. Who's a bigger ass man?
I'm sipping my tea. Because you know what I think? I'm not going to vocalize it. I think Rob Manfred's an ass clown. But that's another story for another day. But I think that he can't get out of his own way. And he constantly wants to do this to Astros fans. And it's annoying.
why the commissioner of baseball wants to ostracize a team, especially a team that has been as successful as the Astros, a team that is on national television as much as the Astros. You would figure, hey, you know what? This is a team we should probably be, I don't know, promoting. We can get more eyes on the game if we are promoting the best teams in baseball, not dumping.
But
all
Pat,
over
you
them.
Bring up a good point. The Astros are coming up on two of their next three are going to be on national TV this weekend in LA against the Dodgers. Do you want this to be the focal point if you're the commissioner of baseball, or do you want them to focus on two really good baseball teams playing really good baseball on national TV? Instead of trying to time this so that it comes out when you play the Dodgers so that they can get, you know, people to read the article in time and people can poo-poo it for 2 days on national TV, it takes away from the value of the brand of the logo of MLB. Instead of trying to celebrate the fact that you have two of these really good teams on national TV, it makes zero sense to me, especially when you are the commander-in-chief of the league, supposed to be making educated decisions.
What happened here was, instead of, you know, looking at this and talking about the stars of each team and how these are two great baseball teams, what we did was we made this white hats and black hats. And as usual, the Astros are wearing the black hat. And despite as much as they've said, embrace the back hat, be the heel, heel out like crazy, the Astros aren't going to do it because Jim Crane doesn't want them to do it. Jim Crane made that very clear in 2020 when he made everybody do those ridiculous apologies. He wasn't going to embrace the black hat. There would be no double rods. Like, they just weren't going to do that. I wish they would, but they're just not going to do that. And if you figure, look, Alex Bregman was the guy that you thought would embrace that kind of personality. Instead, Breggy has gone from, I have a chip the size of Texas on my shoulder. He's become a lot more subdued as a personality. And the Astros don't take that. Like, we go out, we handle our business, we leave. That's what we do.
See, you have the black hat, the white hat, and the ass hat. And the ass hat is the commissioner that just keeps stirring this pot. And then on top of that, you have all these people, and the quote that you were referencing about, this isn't over until every guy from the 17 roster is no longer on the team and or out of the game. Well, that's why they won it again, to prove to you it wasn't about the system. It was about the talent and the abilities of the players within the organization that were a damn good baseball team before and after all of this came out. They won it again. I kept saying over and over again, you got to validate 17 and validate the talent on this team by winning another one. If you do, you prove to everyone how good just baseball talent-wise alone this team was, regardless of anything else. And so that's why I said it was so hyper-important to win a second one. You win the second one, you push the first one behind you and say, there was no allegations, there was no finger-pointing, and you had the best team on the planet. And you proved it. But now, because the commissioner, of all people, wants to get his soup ladle out and stir the pot, now you suddenly got a whole thing brewing again in the kitchen where everybody wants to take their shots all over again.
No, and then how many guys from the team last year were on the team in 2017?
We're down.
Bregman, Altuve.
No, it was five, and now I believe it's four. Is
Bregman,
it three?
Altuve, Yuli.
Oh, yeah.
And Verlander,
Yuli and Verlander both
and
left.
McCullers.
It's McCullers.
So that's it. They're down to three.
And Altuve. That's it.
They're down to three.
Yep.
Who were the biggest stirring parts? What were the straws that stirred the drink against Philadelphia in the World Series? Yordan,
yep,
wasn't on that team. Jeremy Pena wasn't on that team. Kyle Tucker, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Ryan Pressly. None of these guys were on that team. Those are the guys who really are the Astros outside of Altuve and Bregman.
And no question.
Well, can't give those guys any credit. This is, like I said, it's the clownery. And when the commissioner of baseball is the guy who's pulling, I agree with you. I never thought in my lifetime I would say this commissioner is worse than car salesman Bud. When the commissioner's office stopped being an independent entity and became, you know, the buddy show, because we're just going to take an owner and let him, you know, quote, be the commissioner. He's going to play commissioner. He was just an owner. You know, oh, well, team's in his daughter's name now. He's an owner. You think that there's no conversations going on there?
Look, I loved him as the owner of the Brewers. That's fine. But as the commissioner of baseball, he failed miserably. And I don't even care about the whole All-Star game BS. There was just so much more that made him so incompetent. But Rob Manfred is doing a hell of a job making you forget about Bud Selig.
Bud Selig was the guy who turned a blind eye to steroids until Congress wouldn't let him. Rob Manfred is the guy who turned a blind eye to illicit sign stealing until the media put it out there and tarnished the shield, essentially.
Yeah. No.
And every time something – you look at baseball, the history of baseball. Baseball ignores whatever the problem is until either the government or the media puts it on their face and says, you're going to fix it, and you're going to fix it now, and shames them into it.
No,
it's the same thing. It doesn't matter who the commissioner is. It has been this way since the dawn of time in baseball. And for to be bringing this up now, 3-plus years after the fact of the discovery, 6 years after that team existed, you're just tarnishing the game. You are tarnishing the game. You are ostracizing one particular team. Rob Manfred can't be dumb enough to think that, oh, it was only the Astros. He can't be that stupid.
Here's the thing when you look at it, when you think about it from the perspective of all the things that from the Patriots and Deflategate and the whole taping of practices, and then all of a sudden the tapes ended up mysteriously burning in an office fire, and the guy who brought it all to their attention suddenly disappeared off the planet, living on some island they can't find, and all the different mysteries. The one thing that they did was they protected the shield. Players themselves admitted to me and others the reason why they didn't come out and blow the horn on the Patriots is because they were protecting the shield, protecting the league as a whole. Does Manfred really think that the fact that it's only one team protects all of Major League Baseball because it galvanizes the other teams and their fan bases against them? No, because it still talks about how many other teams were doing it, how many other ways. It still casts a shadow on all of baseball to say everybody was doing it or most were trying to do it if they weren't doing it. That's not a good look for baseball. So as much as he thinks he's kind of winning this when he brings it back up, he's actually hurting the overall product.
No, what he should do is just change the look in the mirror. Because what did Rob Manfred say? We're going to hold the team accountable. We're going to hold the front office accountable. We're going to hold management accountable. Never in any of his letters does he discuss we're going to hold players accountable. That's before the suspensions, before the discovery. That was Rob Manfred's edict. We're going to hold the team, that it was team responsibility. When it comes out, oh, yeah, Jeff Luhnow got this email and then just decided, not telling nobody. Okay, we learned that. They didn't know that there was going to be, quote, penalties. And look, that doesn't absolve them from what they did. The same as doesn't absolve any other team from what they did. They all did it. But the fact that Manfred was always on the it's going to be ownership, management, not players, to now turn around and be like, well, you know, I should have included the players. What were you going to do? Were you going to suspend the entire freaking team? How is that going to work?
Maybe minus Altuve, he could play the entire field by himself.
Tell me how you're going to keep competitive integrity in your game when you take one entire team out and say, okay, you guys are going to play with your AAA team this year. How is that going to be feasible? Not to mention, why did players talk? They were given immunity. You saw the Red Sox players were not given immunity. What did they do? They told them to go to hell. And he got nothing. So all this, oh, I should have done this, should have done that. This is a BS discussion with some absolute nonsense that should never be coming to light publicly. If Rob Manfred has personal reservations about what he did or what he didn't do, he should keep them to himself and shut the hell up.
That's what I said. He's an asshat. He's a clown that continues to embarrass himself every time he opens his mouth or continues to address this subject where he tried to brush it all under the rug. He hoped that in one false swoop, if he did what he did to just the Astros the way he did it, that everybody would just turn a blind eye and forget about everything else or anybody else that might have been trying to do this, and it hasn't worked out. Now, normally when you get your ass kicked like that and you get beat up in public like that, you take a licking and you go home. And you go away and you try and lick your wounds and you try and live to fight another day. You don't keep bringing it up so that you can keep stirring up all this negativity that goes league-wide, that casts a shadow and it puts a black eye on the entire sport.
Rob Manfred just likes getting on TV and going, hey, remember that time I sold myself in public? Hey, remember that time? Hey, remember that time? Hey, remember that time? Some point you might want to move on from that. But you haven't figured that out yet. Now, the Astros did take 2 of 3 from the Mets, off day today, go to L.A. tomorrow. Something different happened. The offense, actually picking up the pitching yesterday. Talk about that coming up next. Killer Bees live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
He's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 out at Hooters off the Southwest Freeway in Stafford. Thanks to our friends at Gentle Benz. Joe, yesterday for the Astros, we saw a role reversal. We saw something we haven't really seen this year. The offense was picking up the pitching for a change. And with some help from my good friend, Joe George, back in the studio, we have some nice little audio tidbits to help you experience what it's like when the Astros actually score runs. Starting with Alex Bregman and a first inning RBI single.
3-2 pitch coming. That's a ground ball through the drawn in infield. It's 2-0 Astros. Alex Bregman got down in the count, worked it full, and now an RBI single, his 43rd RBI of the year.
Audio courtesy of our friends at AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. But something I thought was very interesting. Why the hell are the Mets playing the infield in the first inning? It's 1-0. You're playing for the out. If they're playing at normal depth, that's an out. Instead,
that's right.
It's an RBI single. I didn't understand why the Mets were playing in, but Bregman comes through with a base hit in the first inning. And, you know, Breggy had the home run off of Justin Verlander the night before, comes through with a base hit there. Look, they need Alex Bregman.
Well, he's been hot before, so you just have to ask yourself a question. Is this the time where he fully turns the page and he becomes the Alex Bregman we know and love? Or is this going to be just another one of those love roller coasters where, as good as he's been for a short period of time, he dips down again and he never fully maintains and gets back to the Alex Bregman of old? Because we've been down this road before, and he's looked hot for a series or two, and then he falls off the planet. Remember when he adjusted his swing and he brought the bat back down and had it more level instead of more upright, and suddenly he was putting barrel to baseball a lot more consistently. Then he stopped doing that, and he stopped hitting too. But this homestand has set him up to be on a pretty good tear to take that onto the road and see if he can continue to do it. Now, if I see it for another week or so, I'll really start to believe that this is a guy that's going to really be a huge force for this team that they can rely on. I can't rely on Alex Bregman right now because he'll do this for a week or two, and then he'll fall back off again, and that's what scares me, that I don't want to buy in too quickly on it this time because we've seen this game play out before.
Now, Alex Bregman said that he got a phone call from Brian McCann, former Astros catcher, who was telling him to change his elbow placement in his stance. And he said he made that adjustment, you know, in this series, and he's had some success. Now, Bregman's a guy who tinkers with his stance all season long. Tucker's the same way. They're always tinkering. But with Yordan out of the lineup and being out for a month, and Michael Brantley maybe back in a month, we'll see with Michael Brantley.
Maybe back this year.
They need Alex Bregman, somebody to tell him, hey, it's August. So that we get that part of
well,
Alex
even
Bregman.
Even over the weekend, even his outs were barreled up and really solid, well hit baseballs to where you really do have enough evidence to say he's figured something out. He's back to having that really good eye at the plate and then putting barrel to baseball and really hitting it hard, whether they're outs, hits, or home runs. He looks like he's figuring something out, which is encouraging.
Now, over the weekend, Corey Jolks came up in a key spot. Bases loaded, one out, tie game, and had an awful at-bat.
Yep.
The one thing you can't do in that situation is pull a ground ball. You can hit ground ball the other way. You have ground ball up the middle. You can't pull a ground ball. He pulled it right to the third baseman, 5-4-3 around the horn, inning over. They go on to lose that game in extra innings. It was a terrible at-bat. But he's had really good at-bats ever since then. And here's another one, Corey Jolks with a two-run single that tied the game at four in the bottom of the third.
And there's a line drive up the middle, base hit. Two runs are going to score. We're tied at four. Corey Jolks ties it up with a two RBI single.
Now, Corey had a play in the second inning where he misplayed a fly ball, makes up for it there, later on bailed Rafael Montero out of a jam with a nice diving catch. Jokes doesn't have all the counting numbers. Like, his OPS is not that great, but the last several days, he's put together some really nice at-bats.
Forget just bailing out on the diving catch. How about playing the ball off the top of the wall to spin, turn, throw, and get the key out at second base late in the game, too? I mean, his defense was really, really good yesterday, and it's been good in the series. He's starting to become more of a complete player with each and every passing day, and that's something that you really got to be encouraged about when you see what he's able to do, because for whatever reason, he, you know, Dusty still has some kind of, you know, image of negativity about Chaz, but Chaz has been great, and Jolks has been great, and when their numbers are called and they're put in the lineup, more times than not, they're going to do what the team needs them to do to succeed. I was really bummed that he didn't kind of work that at bat a little longer, the one you were talking about with a chance to win the game. I thought he was fully capable of hitting a fly ball or at least hitting something down hard on the ground, maybe even waiting an extra half second trying to take it to right, but hit something hard enough to get that key run in. They should have won that game, in my opinion, but I'm not going to put that all on Jolks because I believe that for a guy in his first stint in the major leagues to do what he's already done this season has been a huge positive for this team.
Now, look, you and I have both maintained for a long time Dusty seems to have something against Chaz McCormick. Look, you can go back to the trade deadline 2 years ago when James Click traded Miles Straw for Phil Maton and Yiner Diaz.
You and I were on the air that
what
day.
What a score that deal was.
Remember that day?
Yeah, that was AJ's going away party. We were at Carbine.
Yep.
And we got on air 30 seconds beforehand because we were missing equipment. Yeah, I remember that day very well. And Dusty basically protested Miles Straw being traded by refusing to play Chaz McCormick and playing Kyle Tucker in center field, which didn't go well. Last year, you know, the team kind of bungled Jake Meyer's recovery, and they forced him up too early. He wasn't really ready to play, although Dusty kept playing him. Wasn't really ready to play. Rather than playing Chaz McCormick regularly, he inserted Mauricio Dubon into center field, talked about his arm strength. Well, that's a different story. But then, you know, what does Chaz do? Iconic moment in the World Series. All Chaz has done this year is hit. He's made an adjustment against right-handed pitching, so he's hitting righties better. Chaz finally got in the lineup yesterday. Here's what Chaz did.
Chaz deep to right field. Chaz Mania Devil do it again. Another Oppo home run. It's 6-4 Astros.
All he does is hit, Joel.
But here's what I don't understand. After all that you just said and after that iconic catch and helping to win the World Series, Dusty kicks him in the jimmy and decides he's sitting out opening day and on ring night. And two straight games, as BMAC points out. That's the kind of stuff that drove me crazy then. It drives me crazy now. I still don't understand it. There's still stories coming out. He still has an issue with all the different ways that, you know, there's people that said it's a known topic in the clubhouse that Dusty has a problem with Chaz. Well, what the hell is it? Chandler Rome or those guys that like to stir it up and can find this information out. Why would he have a problem with a guy that every time his number's called, no matter what he's asked to do, he does his job?
I don't know, but Chandler put it in The Athletic yesterday. It's in one of his stories from
yesterday.
That's
the quote I'm talking about.
That Dusty is just not a fan of Chaz McCormick. That was one of the best postseason catches you will ever see.
Yeah, but Pat, forget that. This year, even after that Dusty crapped on him and set him out and embarrassed him like he did to start the season, he suddenly just picks up where he left off and more. He's a better hitter. He hits more than lefties. He's hitting for power. He's doing all the things asked of him. If he doesn't get hurt, he steps into the leadoff role, and he's doing that too. He did everything asked of him until he got hurt. Once he came back from being hurt, he picked up and started doing it again.
Well, you know, Joel, he's not as good a defensive center fielder as Jake Meyer. The metrics say this. But the metrics still say he's really good. You know, Jake is an elite defender. They knew that. They've had that for years. Jake was the number one defensive outfielder in their system like 2 years in a row. But that doesn't mean Chaz is not also a really good defensive player. And if you have to sacrifice, oh, instead of being worth 7 defensive runs saved, this guy is worth 4 defensive runs saved. But this guy's got a 780 OPS and that guy's got a 700 OPS. Why are we having this discussion? We shouldn't be. And every time Chaz gets a shot, he produces. Another guy who has shown when he gets a shot, he produces, is Yiner Diaz. Now, the Astros had 3 catchers on the roster for 2 months. And in those 2 months, Yiner Diaz had 75 at-bats. All of a sudden, he gets regular playing time in June, and all this guy does is rake.
As he drills one, deep to left field. 96 Astros.
Boy, the sound that thing made off the bat was just different. I mean, next to Yordan, when he hits a baseball and squares it up, there's a special sound to it, and he's showing you why Dana Brown said he needs to get 300 at-bats or more. You understand that this kid's talent, no matter what he has to work on as a catcher, no matter what position he plays, he is a professional hitter. And when he's in the lineup, especially because Yordan's not in the lineup, and this is what I went off on yesterday, I don't care what position he plays, but he's got to be in there every day. Because without your best player that carries you on his shoulders day in, day out, in Yordan Alvarez, and you don't know when you're getting him back, you have to have Diaz in the lineup. You have to have Altuve in the lineup. You have to have your best hitters in the lineup in positions where they can do the most damage, because you don't know when you're getting Yordan back. You don't know if you're getting Brantley back. You don't know what Dana Brown is working on to make this team better between now and the trade deadline. What you do know is the guys on your roster who can hit a baseball, and that starts right at the top part of that list with Yiner Diaz.
You know, before the year started, we did a show together, and we were doing one of those segments that you and Jeremy would do of, I guess, cash it or trash it.
Yep.
And I said, you know, whether it's Yiner Diaz or Corey Lee, that person is going to have more RBIs than Malter and Maldonado. Yiner Diaz is going to make that come true. Thank you, baby Jesus. But this guy was their number two prospect in their entire system entering the season. Their number one hitting prospect entering the season. What team keeps their top bat prospect on the freaking bench when they call him up? Why does it take two months?
Dusty's going to Dusty. You know, Dusty was taking those indirect pot shots through the media about the things he had to work on to be a better catcher. Guess what? He doesn't need those things when it comes to being a better hitter. He's hitting the baseball. He hits the baseball. That's what he does. If you don't want to play him a catcher, don't play him a catcher. But he can play at first base. He can designate it hit. You can move him around a little bit. But the guy's got to be in the batter's box with a bat in his hand, because he makes the team better and he makes things happen when he does.
There's the idea of not playing him every day is like the same as...
It's a travesty.
I want to perform self-dentistry. You know what? I want to fall down an empty elevator shaft. I want to shave with mace. All these things, they don't make any damn sense. Not having him in the lineup doesn't make any damn sense. I tell you what, though, I was stunned as hell to see Dusty actually batted him ahead of Abreu. I didn't think I'd see that all year. It was good to see him actually make that concession to the lineup. Biggest takeaways from yesterday's game, we got him on the other side. He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
Hello, Patrick Creighton.
Geez, Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton for Jeremy Brown. We're live from Hooters in Stafford on the Southwest Freeway. I enjoyed some wings and some curly fries. It's very nice. I see our guys, the promo team, they're out here with lots of freebies. So if you come down, you can pick up some freebies at the freebie table.
Joseph, the newest member of the promo team, he's here today learning the ropes from, of all people, Blake.
Get your ESPN swag. You come and hang out. See the lovely ladies. Get some great food. Hang out with all the guys. I see there's a lot of friends of Joel Blank here.
My friend Marvin is here, thankfully out of dental work. It kept him out of the gym, but doesn't keep him out of Hooters. We know that's the case every single time.
Priorities, Marvin. Tell him priorities.
Can't get to the gym, but he can get to the Hooters. See how it is, Marv.
You and me. You and me, Marv. You and me. Can't get to the gym. I'm getting to Hooters.
Yep.
That was an easy decision, too, wasn't it?
You guys look like the odd couple. Yeah. You guys should actually hang out. I'm just saying.
Man.
The field trip from Lifetime Fitness is here, and all the permission slips have been accepted. It's awesome.
And the check's clear.
That's right.
Now, to me, takeaways. Here are the biggest takeaways for me from yesterday's game. Let's start. We have another little audio tidbit. If I could ask the maestro, Joe George, to cue up. Here's Ryan Pressly with a 1 and a 2 and a 3.
He might have got him. Yes, he did. Ryan Pressly on the check swing. Alvarez went too far. And the Astros close out the Mets with a 10-8 victory.
Ryan Pressly, 1-2-3 ninth, made the adjustment. Throwing a lot more fastballs, setting up that curveball, setting up the slider. The two outings that he gave up runs in the two most recent, one of them he gave up three runs. They made two errors in the inning, one by Bregman throwing the ball to third ward, and then one by Pressly himself forcing a ball home when a 1-6-3 got him out of Dodge. But
I think Jeremy brought up a good point too, though. I think that they were starting to catch on to his sequencing. And teams, you know, as much as they do video work, they were picking up on sequencing and they kind of were trying to figure out, and they could figure out a little bit more what was coming. And with a guy that has just such nasty stuff as he does, again, every advantage a hitter can get, they're going to take. And guys were taking advantage of that because he wasn't making pitches that were bad, that were hanging over the plate, that were screaming, hit me. They were down in the zone. Guys were just knowing what was coming, and they were putting bat to baseball, and that's how the game's played.
I'm going to say something I very rarely say. Jeremy wasn't wrong. What Pressly was doing was, you know, they're so analytical, the Astros, even though people think because Jeff Bagwell's become the spokesman that they suddenly stopped practicing analytics. It's idiotic. But they are very analytical, and what the analytics said was Ryan Pressly's slider is his best pitch. He gets the most swings and misses with the slider. He had become overly reliant on the slider and was throwing it more than he ever had in his career. Batters were just sitting there waiting on the slider. The game where he gives up the solo home run, that pitch isn't a strike. That pitch is low, it is off the plate, and the batter just went down and fished it.
Yep.
That's a terrific piece of hitting, but that's also something that says he was sitting on that pitch, he was looking for it in that location, and when he got it, he hammered it because he knew. And Pressly even said, you know what, there's some adjustment. That was a pitcher's pitch. You don't hit pitches like that. They went back, they reviewed, they saw, wow, he's throwing a slider 54% of the time. He's never done that before.
I think part of the reason why he didn't want to talk to the media after the game, too, was he wasn't going to give you the answers you wanted to hear because he couldn't believe that a pitch like that was hit because he didn't make a bad pitch. He felt good. You know, it's one thing if you know your mechanics are breaking down or your stuff just isn't right. I mean, Montero, for example. I mean, everything's not right about him. And so you feel a certain way. If you're Pressly, you know, you made the right pitch, executed it the right way, put it where you wanted to put it, and a guy still puts it in the bleachers, now you're so pissed off you don't want to talk to the media or anybody else because you're going to go back and look at that video 10 times and try to figure out how the hell did he do what he did to a pitch that was where I wanted to put it. If you know it's coming, it's more possible.
No, and his outing yesterday, you saw the adjustment. More use of the fastball, more use of the curveball. He likes to go to the curve against the lefty, slider against the righty. And you saw the pitchers, they didn't know, the batters didn't know it was coming this time because he was mixing up his repertoire better. And look, sometimes over-reliance on analytics gets you into predictability. And that's kind of what happened with Ryan Pressly. You saw what happens when he's not predictable. The guy's really tough to hit. Yiner Diaz has to play every day. You and I talked about this in the last segment. It, to me, look, whether it's with the catcher or first base, I don't care. At some point, we expect Yordan Alvarez is going to be back. Michael Brantley, we hope, is going to be back. If Michael Brantley is not going to be back, I 100% expect Dana Brown is going to get a bat that could play left field DH and interchange with Yordan Alvarez. Whether you're going to use Yiner as a DH or that position is going to get frozen out, because look, if it's Yordan Brantley, that position is going to be frozen out. He's got to get more time at first base. He's got to get more time behind the plate. You can't keep having guys in your lineup with OPSs under 600 when your team can't score. J.P. France is going to pitch tomorrow. He has given up two runs or less in five of his eight starts. They're 1-4 in those five starts because they keep scoring one run.
Hey, he's the anti-Belak, right? He's the guy when we were talking about the back end of the rotation, guys you trust, guys you don't. The one guy that's looked like, no matter what kind of offensive support he gets, looks like he's a major league pitcher that you should trust with the baseball in his hand, has been J.P. France. And we talked about of J.P. France, of Blanco, of Belak, who do you trust? Well, I'm moving France to the head of the class, and I think France is the guy that showed the most in the smallest amount of time that every time he takes the mound, he looks like he's in total control. He looks like a bulldog that's going to attack every hitter. He looks like he's confident in all of his pitches, and he looks like he can get major league hitters out. Belak looked like every single time he was playing mental hopscotch in his head and hoping to God that somebody doesn't hit a screaming liner because he didn't feel like anything that came out of his hand was going to be effective. And then when you look at Blanco, everybody says, well, he's got good major league stuff. How do we know? We haven't seen that much of him. He's not stretched out enough anyway. And what we've seen him to this point is a guy that's a work in progress that with a team trying to chase the Rangers is in no position to be putting a guy like that on the mound every fifth day to be a starting pitcher for your team.
Well, let me tell you, I never understood the let's make Ronel Blanco a starter because he was a starter back 2014, 2015, 2016 in the minors, and he wasn't very good. So they made him a reliever. That's usually how guys become relievers. They're not good at being starters. To then move him back to the starting rotation at age 29 as a guy who has a history of walking 4.5 to 5 batters per 9 innings, as a guy who has a history of letting the ball fly into the seats, I don't understand how somebody thought this was a good idea. Here is Ronel Blanco's 3 starts with the Astros. 17 innings, 9 runs, 17 hits, 9 walks, 5 homers. In 17 innings.
So he's given up a hit an inning.
And
he's
a walk
given up
every
five
other
bombs
inning.
And a walk every other inning. And you're telling me somehow Dana Brown. I mean, look, I understand Dana Brown saw something in his stuff. But I don't think, again, I keep repeating this for everybody and wanting to remind them. This is not the Astros of any year previous in this golden era of Astros baseball. You're not in first place by 10 games. You cannot take these experimental flyers on pitchers, throwing them out there, expecting they're going to dominate or you're going to let them work in progress, and it's not going to cost you. Every loss is going to cost you right now the way the Rangers are playing. So, therefore, you can't do what they've done in the past. You can't take a guy and go, he's got some good stuff. I think I'm going to make him a starter this year. No. Put him in Sugarland. Let him keep working on his craft. Let him keep getting better. And at a certain point, you can find out if he can be a starter for you in the future. This season is too important from where you sit, from a position of not being in strength like you've been in the past, and you're playing chaser instead of being chased. You can't afford to do those things this year.
Stuff without command does not equal success. I don't care if you throw 96. If you can't control where it's going, and it's going to keep drifting over the heart of the plate.
A hitter's going to control where
Rafael Montero. And it keeps drifting out over the middle of the plate. It's going to go 400 feet. And these are the issues with Ronel Blanco. Couple others that we'll get to on the other side. He's Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton, in for Jeremy Branham. Killaby is live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford.